Hello, everybody.
I'm a bit aware that this is the last day of conference with a lot of presentations and stuff. So before we get going, quick question to all of you. What is your main interest in being here today? Because I have two sections and I can sort of focus my attention on one of them more than the other. One of them is about the journey in moving to Office 365. And the other one is about once you have Office 365, what has been our experience and findings. So how many are mostly here to hear about the journey? Quite a few. And how many about once you do have Office 365? Okay, so it's pretty much equal. I'll do my best to cover as much as possible then. My name is Anders Munk. I'm the Workplace Enterprise Architect for the Carlsberg Group. We are located in Denmark. I see a lot of Danish people here as well. It's always nice. And before the first part of the presentation, I'd like to show you a few slides that I share internally whenever I talk about the workplace. Because there's a few fundamental things you need to be aware of. You've probably seen a lot of them in the keynotes and stuff already. But the first one is that the world has changed and that there's some very profound changes going on in the world right now. There's the millennials coming in, there's the pre-millennials, there's mobile browsing. But the fundamental part of this is that the world is not what it used to be, and this is basically why we are all focusing on this area called the workplace. The thing about change is you cannot really fight it. I mean, this is a global change. This is a different people, different culture. The things are fundamentally changing in the people that are coming in. And if you try to, fight that and say it's not going to affect us, it's not going to be part of our workplace, we're going to do it the way we've always done it, then you're basically in a pretty vulnerable situation because people expect more from you. And what you need to do with change is you need to embrace it. The statistics up here on the slides are actually they're in the comments. Hopefully they'll be downloadable. Otherwise, you can just contact me afterwards and I'll share them. This is all public information. There's nothing, just Carlsberg or anything like that. This is what the world is like today. The last one, though, with engaged organizations, I will say that if you're outperforming your competition, you're probably also very engaged. It's not that you have to have engaged employees to outperform. It's a two-way street. But having said that, coming back to Carlsberg and what our journey has been like, I will start with the decision that sort of drove the decision to move with Office 365 for us. To do that, we have to start with what is the beverage industry like? Basically, the beverage industry is a very mature industry. We have breweries that are more than 300 years old. Most of the markets in the world have had their beer culture. They are not, the growth is very low. And basically, what you need to do in a market like that is you have to control the markets to and leverage the scale benefits in order to have a cost-efficient production. And what that means is that pretty much all the markets in the world today are controlled by one of the four major brewers. And basically what that means for us is that the opportunities we see are mainly in the developing markets, but also in urban areas in certain places. What that means, for instance, a location like this in Atlanta, Georgia. What we would do as Carlsberg, if we needed to get in here, is we would need to focus our attention on this small area and get a lot of fans in here. So that means we had to execute in a specific location halfway around the globe from all of our production systems. So this is the challenge we have, and that means that basically as an organization, to be able to grow, we have to be able to act quickly anywhere. And if you look at the history of Carlsberg, 1990, we were a small company with a big brand, but this was actually true up through most of the 90s. When we came to the end of the 90s, what happened was that Heineken and a lot of the other breweries, they were buying up companies. We had mostly licensed breweries. We were brewing Carlsberg on license. And what happened, obviously, was as soon as they purchased those breweries, they said, stop brewing Carlsberg, start brewing what we're making. And that meant that by the end of the 90s, we were pretty much being overtaken by a lot of the big competitors we had. So we changed strategies, and over the last 15 years, we've been purchasing breweries all around the world. And this tells you a little bit about where we are today, because if you grow from 4 small markets to 31 markets in 15 years, you have a pretty chaotic infrastructure. You don't have a common organization. You have a number of things that you need to address from an IT and a workplace perspective. And if you couple that with the need of being able to act quickly anywhere, you have a conflict. Because the reality is that at the time of when we signed this contract for Office 365, we were really 17 separate organizations. We were 17 separate infrastructures. And when I say separate, I mean completely separate. There were people who were working in IT, they had their own infrastructure, their own PCs, their own Active Directory Forest. They didn't know anything about the others. It was basically 17 different companies, even though they were owned by the same group. And the problem with that is, if you need to act quickly anywhere, you basically have two options. You can do it the classical way, you can say, in merging and building and saying, we need to merge the organizations, we need to build common Active Directory, we need to start building this common foundation and then build the collaboration layer on top of that. But the other option that was introduced back then was to say, maybe we could cheat. Maybe we could start the other way around and put this thin collaboration layer on top and then start standardizing down through the stack and have the rest of the organization follow once we had the collaboration established. And given that I'm standing here today, it's pretty obvious what we did. We did back then do a comparison of Google and Microsoft, and we ended up choosing Office 365 as the platform. So that was pretty much the background for why we decided to go down this path. It wasn't that we wanted to move to cloud. It wasn't that we had an idea about, you know, we need to be on Office 365. It was really out of a business need. And the business need came out of this chaos and inconsistency. And I think that is also part of what then shaped our journey. Because if you look at our project, the whole idea here was basically to get it up and running as quickly as possible. So we signed the contract in the spring of 2012. This was actually 10 days later we had, it says 3 weeks, but that was when we were fully over the test periods and everything. But basically 10 days after, we had 300 people in Greece on this platform. We then did a big bulk of user migration the summer later. Then we had the Asian markets and then Eastern Europe. So basically what we did was we migrated around 25,000 users from all different companies, different infrastructures, different organizations into one Office 365 tenant in around 2.5 years. That's what we did. And what was our experience with that? Oh, they changed the layout a little bit. But basically what it says over there is the green ones, that's where we didn't have too many challenges. The yellow ones are where we had some challenges. And the red ones are where we had significant challenges. So this is a high-level overview, and I'm going to go through each of these to tell you a little bit about what it was we found when we started this journey. One of the main concerns when we started was around security and legal. But what we found was, when we went in and investigated the data centers, and you've heard about this, but think about this was some years ago. This was before, you know, the full security level that we have today. But what we did find when we went in and looked at it was, this was pretty good. And it was, in fact, it had more certifications than our own data center. It had more security processes than our own data center. And all of the concerns from the legal and security department, they were basically okay with it after having looked at it. And this came as a surprise to most of us, and primarily actually to the IT people. The IT people were the most conservative in this process, but from a security and legal perspective, this was given the stamp of approval fairly quickly. Then came the migration itself, I'm not really sure what we did that made it so easy for us, but basically what we said was, we're not going to change anything on Office 365. We're not going to do anything to make this a Carlsberg tenant or anything like that. We're just going to move people into it the way it is. And the second thing we did in the migration, which I sort of, in hindsight, think was a pretty good idea, is we didn't tell anybody about it. We didn't do a big adoption process or anything like that. We just basically went behind the scenes, made sure all the backend stuff was working, and then we switched the Outlook. So basically, we didn't promote any of the other services. We just basically changed to Exchange Online behind the scenes without telling anybody. And then one morning, they just still had their old mail, so nobody noticed that we switched. We even had markets where we didn't tell them at all. We just basically switched over the weekend, and then it was working. And that made it a lot simpler, because Exchange is a very solid service, and moving to that is fairly simple. Then came the operations. As you can probably tell, a lot of these markets, they had local IT departments fiddling around with their local systems. So for most people, this was actually a positive experience. They went from a small system that only worked in the local markets, that wouldn't work on Tuesdays because a guy was running a script or something, and then all of a sudden they were on this platform, they could access it from their mobile, and they had a lot of features they didn't have before. So this was also fairly simple. Where we started to see some challenges, and this was mainly due to our background in being this chaotic organization, was the support. How do you build a support system when you have 17 different IT organizations? And basically what we did was the same as what we did with the tenant itself. We went for the simplest possible solution that we could possibly make. We didn't try to make an advanced workflow diagram, Rocky diagrams, things to, you know, with a lot of people and roles and stuff like that. We just basically went for as simple as possible. And the way we did that was we started aligning the role names in the different markets that were going to support this. We divided the group into three regions, and then we had the same role names and the local service desks and the local operations. And what we put on top of that was one global operations team. So all the issues they had in the local markets came into the same operations team. And on top of that operations team, we had an architect basically for each of the services. So we had one for Exchange Online, we had one for Skype, we had one for SharePoint. The one for SharePoint is actually sitting in the room. And that basically that was the way we managed it, because what happened then was if there was an issue, it went to the global operations team, they could start optimizing, they realized that there's people having trouble with this kind of thing. And then when it went further up into the service owners, then they could say, we are going left or we are going right. And then from there on, I was the final escalation point. So this worked fairly well, I think primarily because it was so simple, but I can only tell from the Carlsberg experience. This was how it was for us. Where we also had some challenges was around license management. And this is mainly coming from an on-prem environment where you can often do things that are not, you know, strictly what it says in the manual to do. I think everybody who's tried to put together IKEA furniture knows what I'm talking about. Sometimes you think you can be creative, and then when you have to follow the manual, then you sort of run into trouble. Some of the things we found in our rollout was for instance, we had in one market, we had people who had activated the account on a meeting room and started using it for file sharing in a project. We had markets where they had taken a mail account and just written the login and password on the wall, and they had a whole team of 20 people using that same account and password because they didn't need individual mails. Obviously, when you move to something like Office 365, those things doesn't really work. It's not how the license model is put together, and it's not how the system is designed. So you have to clean up stuff like that. And you also have to stay on top of the license rules, because this can get very complex really, really quickly. And basically, to this day, we still have internal training on license management, because the second part of license management is that since we started this in 2012, they've basically been new every year. And there's been new services, there's been new license models, they start splitting them into, you know, level one and level two, and what's in one and what's in the other. It's really something you have to stay on top of when you do something like this. Then is the maintenance. And this is all the stuff that changes over time. And I think it's been mentioned in a number of the presentations I've seen as well. Obviously, when you go to a cloud platform, things will change. I think one of the main experiences I've had with this is it's mainly the small things that change. The main services that, you know, the most conservative users notice, they will not change. if you're only using Outlook, you'll never notice that this service changes because it'll only happen when you upgrade your Outlook. It's the, you know, first movers that notice that things change. One of the main experiences I had was one Tuesday morning, we all of a sudden lost our blogs, and then we had a new blog. And luckily, we were only like 3 people using it at the time, but it's one of the things that you really have to stay on top of for the, because the first movers, when you get more and more millennial or first mover type people into your organizations, they will start to notice this, and it'll be changes like buttons moving or the front page moving. Some of it will be very visible. And you have to have a culture around that that can deal with that kind of change. The other thing we noticed was the reporting. The reporting has gotten a lot better over the last few years, but it's still not at a level where we can get the level of detail out that we need in order to manage this. So we have had to purchase a second reporting platform for this. Hopefully that will change in the near future, because it seems like from all the news that are coming out about changes to reporting that somebody in the Microsoft product team has also noticed the same thing. Then came some of the things that were really, really hard for us. And these are things that we're still struggling with to this day. First of all, the way, basically because we put this layer on top without doing anything underneath. We went into this with a network in Western Europe, for instance, that was completely hub and spoke, where all the lines have just been downgraded to the bare minimum. And then all of a sudden we are moving to cloud and we are moving a lot of traffic up there and people are, you know, wanting to do that. And at the same time, just cloud in general have taken off and people are starting to use a lot of online services. And this has been really, really difficult to manage. And it's one of the places where we are still struggling to find the right solution, because obviously you have to balance people who want to have this perimeter of security and then also the performance for the end users. The only thing I can say is that we're probably going to do some of what has been recommended here as well, which is to start taking the user devices out of the internal perimeter and putting the perimeter on the end user device instead. Because it's really the only way to get around this. But it's a slow process. Network is not something where you just, you know, switch it through two or three devices and then the whole thing works. The second thing about the network is the way that that Microsoft does their DNS on their side. They have a lot of addresses for Office 365. And because a lot of them are on Akamai, they will switch from time to time to optimize bandwidth. And if you don't have a firewall that can deal with that, a DNS-based firewall, then you will see that you will have to sit and monitor those IP addresses almost on a daily basis to make sure some of them don't change and start interrupting the traffic. It's something we've seen in a lot of our peers as well. And then comes the last one, which is adoption. Basically, as you can probably tell, we did the sneaky thing. We changed to Office 365 without telling anybody. But what we found afterwards as well is that getting adoption on a lot of these services can be quite hard. Exchange is easy. Skype is also easy because most people know it. But once you get to SharePoint, once you get to Yammer, some of these services that people are not so familiar with and that are also somewhat complex, a lot of them, they have a lot of options and buttons and things you can push and things you can do wrong, then it becomes quite hard. And basically what we found was that a lot of the new features like, for instance, Delve that we've had for a while now, people don't really notice it. You can have a meeting with young people, first mover types who are, you know, using this every day, and you can show them a link to Delve and they'll be surprised. They'll go, oh, that's nice. And this is, you can say, this is a positive experience when you do it. I have a personal policy of introducing people to a feature they didn't know about in every meeting I have. But from an adoption perspective, it's not really a good thing, right? Because even though I can be a success from a company of around 23,000 users on this platform, it's not so positive, because you want people to leverage what's out there. You're paying for it after all. So this is some of the things we've been struggling with. In summary, the migration to Office 365 was less trouble than we thought, basically. It wasn't as much of a challenge as we would thought it would be when we started. And the end results, where we are today and what benefits we're getting out of it, it's been much better than we expected. It's been also from a stability perspective and a lot of other things, this is to our end users, this really feels like a global collaboration platform that they all have access to. So the goal is there. And we've been involved with Microsoft the whole way. There's been a lot of talk about Fast Track. To be honest, I'm not really sure when we used Fast Track and when we didn't, because we had a lot of contact with a lot of different Microsoft people along the way. And it's been really, really helpful. And basically, the conclusion from the journey part of this is that we would do it all again, and in fact we are. Moving to services to the cloud has become a core part of our strategy, simply because this journey that we've done with Office 365 has been such a success. And I think that's the most telling point in what the internal experience has been with this. And that brings us to today. I think one of the things that we've found after we've been through this journey is it's not really about technology anymore. We're basically getting value out of this platform every day that we use it. But the thing about availability is that it's not really a good thing. What we've found, for instance, this is a statistic from the Q1 of 2016. In Western Europe alone, they use over 700 online tools for collaboration, in spite of us having a global platform. And when you think about something like collaboration, you really want people to use the same tool, because it really doesn't work if you want to share a file with another guy and he's using something else than you. Then you're not sharing anything. Then you're just discussing which tool to use. So this is a basic challenge, and I think most companies have this challenge, but it's not all of them that does the measurements. We did the measurements. We looked into the log files. We looked at what people are actually doing. They're using pretty much anything out there. The second thing is that a workplace today is full of noise and clutter. We send more mails in spite of having other options. We store more files. It's much easier to create things. So all the time, there's getting more mails, more noise, more files, things you have to deal with in order to do your job. And all of us, I think, know this feeling about where do I find stuff and then being frustrated that you can't find it. This is the experience of people when we go out and talk to them, in spite of having Office 365. But the thing is that when that happens, it reduces the value of your investments. When we look, for instance, at the Skype and OneDrive, we can see that it's the top 10 users using pretty much all the service. And the thing is, you see the same thing on all systems. Because you could say, this is all Skype's fault, this is all OneDrive's fault. But if we look at SAP, if we look at our global HR system, if we look at all of these things, you see the same pattern repeating. There's a small group of people using pretty much everything, and then there's a long tail of people who rarely use it at all. But you pay the full license fee for all of them. And this is really the workplace challenge that we see today. And you can say basically it's three challenges. There's an increasing demand from the people that are coming in. The increasing demand is there because there are people who have who know about things that you can do with IT that they cannot do with the corporate IT. This is where all the new ideas are coming from, and there's market changes that means they need to use new tools that you don't have today. And the inertia of a large organization means you cannot just, you know, introduce them from one day to the next. The second point is about easier access. Since there's much easier access to a lot of these tools, either you can go to an online service and use it, or you can download a portable app, or you can do all of these things yourself. And then there's the final point, which is you still have a finite change capacity. Firstly, because a lot of people are already dealing with all this noise and confusion about what to use and how to collaborate, and now they have to deal with people bringing in new stuff. And what that does to the organization is it creates this negative cycle. It's basically, I compare it a little bit to a toy store where you go in and you buy a toy and you don't read the manual, it doesn't work because you cannot figure out how to use it, and then you go buy the next one. So it increases over time. You get more and more noise and clutter. You get more and more applications and tools into the organization, and people can't deal with that, and then they go out and buy new stuff because at least they know that. They saw this great ad, they had a cousin who knew about a tool, or they'll use that instead because they feel more comfortable with it and they can't deal with what you already have. And this is really what decreases the value of your investments. It doesn't have anything to do with Office 365. It's just a condition of the modern workplace. So how do you deal with that? I'm being very quiet here because I hope somebody had a suggestion. How do you deal with that? Well, the first thing we've been doing, and a lot of this is still work in progress. So I'm sorry, I don't have the perfect solution for how the future is going to be and how we're going to fix all this. I'm just going to say what we're doing about it. And the first thing we've been doing about it is we've started to focus on people, because this is really about people more than it's about technology. Technology is pervasive now. This is about the people and the culture and the organization. And the thing about people is, obviously, we just talked about this negative cycle, but there's also the mere fact that if you don't have 30% of people transformed into using something, they're just going to start using other things. This is a classical graph for change management people, saying if you don't reach the 30%, you might as well have, you know, done something else with your time. And this is very, very hard to achieve when you also have that negative cycle going. And so how do you get around that? And one of the things that we're looking at is how to get a deeper understanding about what is it that people need, what is it they're after, how are they working. Gartner has a model. If you have access to Gartner's material, you can go in and look at it. It's basically based on mapping out what are the different things that people need to do in their workday and making sure you have a standard tool for each of those that you can communicate and that's easy to, you know, talk about. The second model is from a company called Innovisor, which have, I think, a very interesting model. So I brought a few slides from that. You can see it on their own website. Basically, what they do is they start mapping this as a social network. They ask questions like, who would you go to for help about something? And then they start mapping out, how does the organization really look? This is an example from a company that had purchased another company, where they then mapped out and saw that after 5 years, they were actually basically different companies. And they were also have very different ideas about what it meant like to be in that company. Some very interesting things to get out. And also what they've been able to do is to focus where it matters more. What they found was that if they just did the classical change management exercise, where they talked to the managers and middle management, started creating these workshops and stuff, they only reached a small percentage of the overall organization. But if they instead started focusing on where were the influencers in the company, they can get a lot better reach simply by contacting the 10 most influential people in the organization. So this is dealing with the organization in a new way, approaching people in a different way, where you start to look at where are the influencers, where are the bottlenecks, what is it that divides us, how are people actually working, how are they actually thinking about being in your company. It's things that we need to think about, and this is also where it's very interesting that Microsoft are investing so heavily in this social graph, where you can start pulling some of this information out. One warning I would give, though, is that the guy who's doing these things, one of the things he told me was when they analyze who people talk to online, who they send mails to, and compare it to these results, they're not always the same thing. Who you send the most mails to is not necessarily the guy that you would go to for help if you had a problem. So you probably need to do both. It's not something where you can just, you know, pull it out of an IT system. As an IT person, that's always where we'd go first. And then comes the second part. The first thing was about understanding people better. The second part is about how comprehensive an execution we do. Because one of the things about people is, if you have one part of the organization saying one thing and another one saying another, who should I listen to? And basically, this is what we're looking at, saying we want, whether it's IT, HR, legal, communications, whoever it is, we need to be able to align those to one change management message or one culture message. What is the story about being in Carlsberg? Who are we? What are we doing? Because what we see today is that every project, there's a new HR project, there's a new IT platform, there's a one Carlsberg portal, there's all these different things. But if you don't bring those together in one story, you're really just adding to the noise. And this is what we're trying to achieve here. Oh, there you go. So basically what we're trying to do is we're trying to get all these different functions to work as one when it comes to change management. And secondly, to look at culture, collaboration, personal computing, workplace resources, basically as one thing. One thing, 360-degree view of what is it that it's like to work in Carlsberg, both with the tools, with the devices, with the online collaboration, with the terminology, the taxonomy, and all of, and the templates that we use, but also the culture on top of that. Who are we, what are we trying to do, and who do we talk to? So that is the workplace changes we are looking at. And the summary of that is that a modern workplace, it requires a new focus. It requires that you look at different things than what we used to look at. Secondly, that even the best IT is not really enough, because the IT tools in themselves would just be more noise unless you bring them into a cultural context about how to use them and what to use them for. And what Office 365 has done for us in Carlsberg is it's really allowed us to focus where it matters. Because without Office 365, we'll still be worrying about the next big upgrade and when to patch the servers and all this stuff. That's really not important to Carlsberg. What's important is who we are and what we're trying to do. And that's why both the mobility and cloud first is really now a core strategy for IT. So that was really both the journey and also what it brought us and where we are today. And with that being said, I would like to open the floor for any questions or comments, or hopefully if somebody has the perfect idea about how to fix this negative cycle I talked about. I'm not sure. Hear me? Otherwise, I'll just repeat the question.
Okay, cool. I wondered if, before you moved to SharePoint Online, did you run SharePoint on-premise?
Yes.
And how did your users react to that migration of the SharePoint? Could you give us a little bit more information of how you did that? Did mm-hmm. you notice performance degradation compared to on-premise, moving into the cloud, especially with your hub and spoke network? And just, yeah, how are your users took to that change?
Yeah, I can definitely put some words around that, because I work with SharePoint since 2001 and also have support from Eric down here, who's our SharePoint guy. Basically, we never retired the on-prem. We never migrated the sites from on-prem. We added SharePoint Online as an additional service, and then we've been pushing that service as more of an out-of-the-box service, because what we had on-prem was a much more, you can say, customized environment. And we didn't want to bring that chaos into the online service, because if we brought that much customization into that environment, we would have to maintain it forever and ever. So we added it as a new type of service, one where you could just call service desk, get a site collection, get up and running within some parameters of that, about that. So you can say the benefit of that is that we have a fairly pristine SharePoint Online environment. The downside is that we have two environments that we have to contend with. And what we're doing right now is we are maturing the online services so that we can start having a service that fits to each of the on-prem services, and then we'll start migrating on a per-request basis. The second part of your question was around performance. And there's no question that performance is worse on SharePoint Online. There's also a lot of pitfalls. I remember very vividly when we did our first prototype for a new intranet front page, and we'd done a lot of search-based web parts. I think we added like 7 of them on the front page just to see what it would do. And it took like 30 or 40 seconds to load the first page. Obviously, we did something completely wrong, but because you can get much better performance than that, right? But it's still something you have to be aware of. And what we've seen also in the market is a lot of people who did intranets on SharePoint Online, they would put parts of the, you could say, for instance, the news web parts, they would put those on an Azure platform just to get better performance locally. the critical components on the page. That being said, though, I think a large part of the new publishing environment that's coming out, a large part of the new first group news and then enterprise news later next year, that's all about improving that performance and reducing the issues we've seen in the past. So this is part of what we're also doing right now. We are waiting a little bit to see what happens. Yes?
Yes. What did you do with all these Outlook add-ins you probably had before you took the decision on going to the cloud? You must have some.
Of course, everybody has Outlook add-ins. Even Microsoft makes them. There's one for Dell now. Yes. You mean in terms of them being not compliant with the Exchange Online?
Exactly.
Yeah, because a lot of them are actually located on the Exchange server itself. And that's where the problem comes. That's where they're not compliant, right? So, but what we did was we ran a hybrid for a long while. And while we had that, we had an archiving system that used the plugin that we couldn't use with Exchange Online. So what we did was we took that archive and we basically started retiring it. And when it was completely retired, then we moved the last accounts. And the only thing we use our on-premise Exchange for today is for configuration, because it's easier to configure in that environment. So we basically retired all of the plugins that we had.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes?
Hi. Great presentation. I have a question about the governance model inside your company, about the ownership, strategic ownership of the platform. Mm-hmm. I often speak to clients that the IT manager get caught in the middle. Yeah. Have you had an HR perspective with the HR director working in the governance model, taking decisions, because this is about empowering people in their work, or is HR in the backseat? Can you have any comments on that, if it's good or bad?
Yeah. I mean, actually, I think pretty much every year for the last 5 or 6 years, I've been up to HR and asked them if they wanted to join. But so far, they'd had other priorities. So far, this is still an IT-led project. We do have we have a learning management platform, for instance, that's separate from Office 365, which doesn't really make sense because of this. But I'm hopeful that we'll bring them on board, because they started a global HR project, and the only way to do that is to leverage the global infrastructure we have on Office 365. So next year. You had a question as well?
Yes, please. Did this go in conjunction with any physical workplace change? So did you change the office environment in any way to help people work differently?
Not really, no. As I mentioned, we did this a little bit under the, without telling anybody. So for most of them, they didn't notice. But what we are doing is we are building a new HQ, which is supposed to be ready in 2020. And this is also where all this work about, a new way of addressing the workforce is coming from. Because we need a different approach if we are going to leverage this in a more, you can say a pervasive way, because we have to look at both, how to design meeting rooms, desks, office spaces, all of that stuff.
And just about your mobile adoption, do you have any advice for driving additional kind of mobile use of some of these toolings?
My personal finding has been that people do it on their own. I mean, I was surprised. Well, you can see it in the Office 365 portal, right? You can see what people are using to access it. And you can, year on year, you can see that mobile access grow. So we haven't done anything, but people are doing it on their own.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes?
Hi. Did you run into any data privacy issues with Workers' Council when you move data to the cloud, and how you handle them?
Yeah. I mean, we have companies in France, in Germany, and in Russia, which are pretty much the worst ones when it comes to that. Worst, sorry, but the most diligent. and the places where we had there were some things we needed to work around. In France and Germany, for instance, you have to adhere to the language. So you had to do different language versions. In Russia, there's this thing about personal information has to be managed within Russian borders. But the thing about that, though, is that since the design of how you manage Office 365 identities means that you will, in most cases, still manage it on-prem in your Active Directory and then use AD Connect to migrate them to the cloud, you really get around that legislation. So for a lot of this, it wasn't really, we haven't run into any, you know, main issues yet. So far, all the challenges we had from workers' councils and stuff, we just pointed them to the Microsoft compliance page, and then we didn't hear anything again. So it's, so far, it's been fairly simple.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any more questions? Yes? Yeah. The question is, I was talking about PST file migrations. How did we do that? This was a fun example because we've done that in a number of markets. The first one, which I remember the most vividly because it was the first, was Greece. In Greece, they had a Lotus Notes system and they wanted to get to the cloud because they were basically out of support on that system. And what they did was that IT department, they installed Outlook on all their PCs. And that was the big change for them, because once they had Outlook, they'd basically configured Outlook to download all mails to the PC. And then after having that for 2 weeks, we signed the contract in the meantime for Office 365. Then 10 days later, over a weekend, they went around to each of the, told everybody, leave your PC at work. And they went to each PC, and then over the weekend, they basically just switched the email from the Lotus Notes system over to the Office 365. So on Monday morning, they had their new mail. So that's physically how we did it. It was just people running around, just switching those manually. And then on Monday morning, they had a new mail system. And they didn't notice anything different, because it was the Outlook cloud client, and that stayed the same. So that's how we did it. The only caveat in that is, obviously, if you want to do it that fast, you have to use cloud accounts. You can't integrate to an on-prem Active Directory and all that over a weekend. And we've done that same trick in Asia in a number of markets, because there's a lot of those markets where they're coming from proprietary email systems and stuff. So install Outlook, configure it to download all mails, and then do the switch in one day or when they're off or on a holiday or something like that. Yeah?
So you mentioned at the start that you have 17 companies and you have a global vision of one. So are you doing, I presume that's 17 AD forests or multiple forests.
Yeah.
So is there an objective to consolidate that in a separate project, or are you keeping them as they are? Or because each one represents identity stores, workstations, groups, and exchange organizations, and so on. So what are you doing about the old premise infrastructure?
Basically, what we're doing is, as I said, we started this. This is why I call it standardizing from the top down instead of from the bottom up, because we established Office 365 as the global standard, and then we've been moving down the stack ever since. So yes, we split the company into we divided it into three groups: Western Europe, Eastern Europe, and Asia. And for each of those regions, we set some global standards in place for what we wanted to achieve, one of them being having one regional AD forest. And each of those regions have been working on that ever since. That is why today in Western Europe, we basically just have one forest. In Eastern Europe, we just have one forest. And in Asia, they're still working on it. But that's the majority of those 17 separate IT organizations were in Asia. So they had a longer journey ahead of them. But yes, we are doing that. We're standardizing the whole stack down to the server room, but we are doing it from the top down.
But why didn't you put one forest in for the world if you are seeking to be unified?
That may very well be the next step. Okay. It's for the moment, just getting those regions in place is what we are aiming for. But doing one global forest, it may very well be the next step. The end goal we're aiming for is one organization, obviously. Yes. Yeah, the question is, do we federate with any external entities like tenants? And no, we don't. We have some, we have done in the past a little bit, because we have companies that are minority owned that had their own system. So we've created a connection there, but nothing major. But I think this was the strategy from the beginning was just have one tenant and use it as out of the box as possible, not trying to do anything too fancy, because we were coming from a very, very complex on-prem environment, and we tried to bring as little of that as possible into the cloud. Yeah, he's saying he refers to other vendors and partners. Basically, the global operations team we had, those are from Tata Consulting. So yes, we have some integration with them, but since they're also managing the environment on a day-to-day basis, it's not really something that is a big challenge for us. Any more questions? No, it doesn't seem like it. And we are 20 seconds over time. So thank you very much. And